Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 20 of the World Soccer Talk podcast, we discuss the comedy of errors from Fox Sports and US Soccer in their coverage of the World Cup qualifiers, news about huge ratings for games on US television, and whether the Bundesliga's new global strategy is dead on arrival or not. I'm joined today by Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay, and for everyone, I'm Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and here we go with the World Soccer Talk podcast, where we're going to dive into, first of all, what we've been watching. So, Kartik, what have you been watching this week?
A heavy dose of international football, the U.S. games, mostly CONCACAF. I've got on my DVR still Northern Ireland, Norway game I want to watch. Saw portions of England, England and Lithuania, but actually had was on the phone during that match, so didn't really get to focus on it. And also Germany, Azerbaijan, flipping back and forth. I was working during the Germany-England game, but kept pretty good track of it online and got to see the screamer from Podolski. So that was definitely a highlight of the week and great win. For a great player to go out. I know we talked about it last week on the pod, but great way for a great player to go out.
So we'll get into some of those games in a little bit, but let's start off with the USA against Honduras match. First of all, Kartik, what did you think in terms of the performance?
Oh, it was outstanding for the United States. It was the best performance we've seen from the United States in some time. A lot of urgency around how the team needed to come out, considering the situation they were in World Cup qualifying, and a bit of a new manager bounce under Bruce Arena. A lot of injuries to speak of, and we'll get into that in a few minutes, but I thought the U.S. was, from a performance standpoint, very, very good. Although, again, I get a lot of complaints about why these games are on FS1 and not on ESPN, and just for those who don't know, there is a rotation. There are six games in the hex that ESPN and Fox get them split up, so it's 1-1-1-1. The next game will be on ESPN. The away games, other than Mexico, are all on BN due to contractual arrangements that were out of the control of U.S. soccer. But the U.S. home games and the game in Mexico, Mexico has the same marketing partner as U.S. soccer does that sells TV rights. So U.S. and Mexico games are essentially bundled into one package, which Fox and ESPN have. And it's actually connected to the Major League Soccer package. The other four games, like the game in Honduras last night, are for English language audiences on BN Sports, and that is out of the control of U.S. Soccer. It seems, Chris, we explain this every time it happens, and yet there's still more questions about it, so I figured I would just get it out of the way.
Yeah. No, it's good to mention that, too, because on Twitter there were a lot of questions, people asking, why isn't the Panama-USA game on national TV? And I'm thinking to myself, okay, it's on national TV, it's just that it's on beIN Sports. It's a channel that not everyone gets. It's in, like, what, about 30 million homes. But there is always confusion, always chaos whenever a game's not on Fox or ESPN. There's a lot of, casual sports fans that just freak out and go, okay, this is ridiculous that the game's not on television. Well, it is on television, and it may be on a channel that you get or maybe not get, but there's so many options out there to be able to watch these games. At this point in time, I find it hard for people to be making excuses. I mean, all you have to do is just do a quick Google search and you'll find legally several different sources of ways to watch the game, either on TV or streaming. And actually worldsoccertalk.com, that's something we specialize in and focus on is making sure that people have, can find out where the games are, what time, kickoff times, which is always kind of, something that fluctuates, especially in CONCACAF, games. But Carter, let's go back to the USA Honduras game on Friday, for a second though. The performance on the pitch, I agree. To me, it was a breath of fresh air. I thought they played with a new sense of energy. It was very positive performance. It was, to me, at least out of all the matches I've watched this past week, and there's been a lot of games I've watched, I've lost count, this was the most entertaining and appealing one to me. Having said that, Kartik, I thought Honduras was very weak in the first half, gave the U.S. so much time and space on the ball, and the U.S. basically, which is great for them, was able to penetrate and take advantage of that situation and come out of this game 6-0. I mean, who would have imagined this one, Kartik? under a Klinsmann kind of reign. I mean, I'm sure the performance wouldn't have been as good, but it's positive signs, at least from Friday's game.
Yeah, I think a major change between Klinsmann's U.S. team in critical must-win matches and what we saw in this Honduras game was a lack of fear, a willingness to go forward with gusto, with numbers early, and a freedom to express yourself. Now, there is this reputation that is just been spun, I think, by those who have an agenda in the U.S. soccer fandom, that Klinsmann is this magical foreign coach, and Arenas, this very regimented American coach who will stifle the creativity of the side. I saw quite the opposite, quite frankly. And this was true when Arena first managed the U.S. team. I thought that was the most creative period, where midfielders were given more freedom and wingers to be creative players than they were under Bradley or under Klinsmann. And I think part of it is that Arena is not a huge tactics guy, right? He's kind of a more of a motivational type man manager. And we saw that freedom come out, and then you just have the continuing brilliance of Christian Pulisic. But noteworthy is how well Darlington Nagbe played in a new role for him with the national team, how well Clint Dempsey returned from his injury, or his heart problems, excuse me. And I thought how well in that particular game, not in the Panama game, we'll get to that in a little bit, but how well against Honduras Jozy Altidore played as a foil and as a supporting striker. I thought he had an outstanding game in what was a little bit different of a role for him. He's usually the primary goal scorer.
Yeah, and it's something, though, too, that especially in this modern game, Kartik, I mean, coaches like Pep Guardiola and others, I'm sure Jurgen Klopp and many others, are very, very restrictive in terms of how their players play. They have to play within a certain, you know, I think it was what Thierry Henry, I think Pep kept on saying to him, okay, you can't cross the halfway line, or you have to tuck in. You don't have the type of freedom that you used to have, say, you know, a decade ago. Managers are very, very controlling in terms of where you play and how you set up. So there was that freedom, which I saw against Honduras. And it was a joy to watch. It was an entertaining game, especially for the U.S. winning, it was scoring all those goals. But still, it was a renewed sense of enthusiasm in the U.S. team, and something we've been missing for a very, very long time. Now, Kartik, performance on the pitch was fantastic. What about off the pitch in terms of the coverage from Fox?
Well, I have to thank our colleague Daniel Feuerstein for saving me from Fox's pregame and postgame for the most part, because we had our Feuerstein Fires pregame and postgame show, which, by the way, you probably got better analysis on. I'm not just tooting my own horn, but all our other guests also provided this than you would have gotten on Fox. The little I saw Fox's pregame show, it was a clown show with no analysis, with no real definitive discussion of how the U.S. was going to play, how Honduras was going to play beyond the basic, hey, this is, you know, you have to go out there and prove things, or this is where you put your foot down and you show how strong you are, and psychological factors, etc. It was very, very poor. That having been said, Fox's game coverage with Landon Donovan, along with Stu Holden and John Strong, I thought was very, very good. Mm-hmm. I think Landon Donovan adds a lot as a co-commentator. He's outstanding, quite frankly, and he's outstanding with very little training. Now, of course, he's had years and years and years of media training as the big star for the U.S. men's national team and the big star in Major League Soccer, obviously had a few stints in Europe. He's also very well-versed in Spanish, speaks Spanish beautifully, I'm told by my Latino colleagues, to the point where I think he's maybe able to gather in more information and understanding of teams like Honduras when the United States plays them, of teams from Latin America. But I'm really impressed by Donovan. And his analysis is spot on, and he doesn't seem to want to pull punches like so many other commentators on U.S. games do. So he's not quite at Taylor Twellman's level. No one is. But he's quickly emerging as maybe second in that pecking order.
Yeah, I'm going to actually go fast forward and then go backwards. So I'll fast forward to the game itself. And personally, I still prefer Landon with JP as far as the partnership, just the two of them together. There's a better energy or kind of just the teamwork in terms of them working together. To me, I personally prefer that. Having said that, though, John Strong and Landon did well. Stuart Holden, it was interesting, Kotick. I think, to me at least, having three people in the booth and having Stuart Holden and Landon Donovan, it was a bit of a duplication. I didn't really see the point in having all three of them there. To me, at least personally, I mean, I don't think Holden added that much on top of what Donovan was saying. And if anything, it kind of diluted a little bit of what Donovan was saying in terms of, you mean, airtime, having three people trying to talk all over the game. But I thought they did well as a trio. I just personally think, JP and Landon's the better partnership. And actually John Strong and Stuart Holden work really well together too. So I'm sure hopefully we'll see those two guys, those two teams are two partnered up, Gold Cup and World Cups ahead of us. As far as the pre-game itself, I think you hit it a nail on the head there, Kartik, in terms of it was a clown show. And it was a clown show, really, to me, because you had Fernando Fiore on. And I like him, personally. I think he's funny. I think he's energetic. I think he adds something to it. But when he's partnered with Lalas, then Lalas gets sucked into that. And then Lalas starts acting like a clown, too. And you miss the whole really advantage of having Lalas, and the reason that Fox hired him was because he's a smart guy. Tactically, he's pretty decent, but he's very opinionated. You mean, and people either love Lalas or they hate Lalas. But having Lalas with Fiore, to me, is just a bad combination. Now, the whole pregame itself, Kartik, you missed a lot of it, so lucky to you, but It dragged on. It dragged on and on and on. And the reason it dragged on was because originally, and this is going back for probably about 2 months, Fox had been promoting on TV ads on their network the doubleheader. It was going to be Mexico, Costa Rica on FS1, started at 8 o'clock, followed by USA against Honduras on FS1 at 10 o'clock. And it was a doubleheader. It was going to be a big deal. And they'd been promoting this for months, for about 2 to 3 months. And then the day before the game, so on the Thursday, Fox sent out a press release. It was, I think, two lines, and it said Mexico, Costa Rica has been moved from FS1 to FS2. And essentially, that was all it said. There was no explanation.
So it wasn't my fault. Okay, so I thought I had made a mistake because I had set the DVR to record Mexico, Costa Rica, then suddenly found the game wasn't recording at 8:30, and that this pregame show was coming on, and I thought, what the heck? And then I checked FS2 and it was on there, but I thought I had made a mistake and I had misunderstood the ads and that it clearly said FS2 and FS1, although I had remembered it as an FS1 doubleheader, and it actually set my DVR accordingly, which I guess I did correctly because it probably was on the program guide, Mexico versus Costa Rica, at the time I set my DVR. Wow. Okay. Right, right. So that's what happened.
Yeah, that's what happened. Well, and actually what seemed to have happened, so we don't know this for sure, but it looks very likely that this is what happened, is that a combination of Fox Sports, Univision, and then, you know, I guess FMF, I guess the Mexican Federation, didn't realize that Mexico doesn't observe daylight saving time until April 2nd. And what happened was that they thought originally, okay, there's plenty of time to have the Mexico game against Costa Rica shown live. And then right after that, have the USA against Honduras game, a double header. And what they didn't realize was that Mexico actually wasn't observing daylight savings time. So the game actually didn't kick off till, I think it was like about 9 o'clock Eastern time, which if it did start at 9 Eastern time, then it would finish at 11, well, just a few minutes before 11 Eastern time. And then Fox would have like, what, 5 minutes of pregame coverage to then show the USA Honduras game.
Yeah, and just for our listeners who don't know this, who are in the United States changes its clock at a different time than the rest of the world does. So the rest of the world that doesn't observe daylight savings time changes their clock the same weekend. However, the United States does it 3 weeks, I think, 2 or 3 weeks in advance, which is why, if you're a Premier League fan, you're stunned that suddenly the games are at 1:30 instead of 12:30 on NBC. The NBCSN games, instead of being at 7:30 in the morning, are at 8:30 in the morning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's the reason. So Mexico, it didn't do anything wrong here. They're on the same clock as the rest of the world. It's the United States and the United States Congress specifically that has fooled with daylight savings time, and it messes up everything from TV schedules to airline schedules to you name it. It messes things up that the U.S. shifts the clock, its clock at a different time than the rest of the world.
Yeah, and what it appears to be, I don't know 100% for sure, because, I mean, Fox is not going to be willing to just admit that they screwed up on this one. But what it appears to be is that both Fox and Univision didn't realize about the time change, basically, or the lack of a time change in Mexico City for this game. So Fox had the choice then, too, like at the last minute. Okay, do we do a doubleheader where there's just a 5 minutes of pre-game coverage for the USA game? Or do we switch the Mexico, Costa Rica game to FS2 and then have the pregame coverage on FS1? And the pregame coverage would be for both a little bit for the Mexico game and a little bit for the US game. And so what they did is precisely that. They just had the, US Honduras game on FS1, that kicked off, like, 10:55, I think, by the time it actually kicked off. And then Mexico-Costa Rica game on FS2. So what ended up...
And the Mexico-Costa Rica game ended around 10:48 Eastern time.
Yeah.
So they would have had... They would have made it, but I guess they wouldn't have had a pregame show.
Right, yeah. And TV commercials, forget about it. I mean, once you add a couple of those in, then you've got like 2 minutes of analysis. So,
yeah, that's it, right.
So a total screw-up. And what ended up happening then, too, is the pregame coverage on Fox just dragged. I don't think they were planning on having, up until the last minute, having the pregame coverage last this long, which was, almost a couple of hours. So it just dragged and dragged and dragged. There was a lot of filler. There was very little analysis, very little insight. Just a lot of commercials. I don't know. To me, it was just very, very weak. And I think from you, Kartik, from what points that you saw, you were coming in late into that pregame, but you didn't miss much at all. So a total mess up. And it was unfortunate too, because I'm sure from Fox's point of view too, to have the doubleheader now that they're showing Mexico games in English, having the doubleheader would have been huge. And as a result, the viewing audience for the FS2 Mexico Costa Rica game was 70,000, which of course most L3 fans are going to watch it on Univision. You mean in Spanish, but still, I'm sure Fox was hoping to get that on. If they had it on FS1, they were probably thinking, I mean, like 200,000, 300,000, 400,000.
Yeah.
They had 70,000, which is, I mean, that's less than, I don't know, a Bundesliga game. That's nothing.
So, Chris, let's talk about the television numbers for this game on Friday, because I think it was a great, great number, all things considered. And let's mention the late start time, 10:55 on the East Coast, and that the NCAA tournament was going on at the same time, including for those of us here in the state of Florida. The University of Florida was playing, Wisconsin was playing the Badgers, and in what was a great game, and a game that ended up, going into overtime and lasting longer than the U.S. game. So, there was a lot of competition.
Yeah.
On television that night, and yet between Fox or FS1, Univision Deportes, and I believe the game was on UniMas, not on regular Univision, it pulled 1.6 million.
Yeah, and actually it was on Univision too, so it was it was confusing. So
yeah.
It was Univision Deportes and UniMas. And then USA Honduras game had 1.6 million, which so from three different networks, but still a decent number. For, like you said, too, a very busy weekend in terms of, basketball. But, and then on Fox Sports 1, so FS1, for the USA Honduras game, they had 579,000, which is pretty decent. I mean, it was a late game, and there was tons of people on the East Coast complaining about the kickoff time being so late. And then Univision's 1.6 million was very, very good.
Yeah, and I think, I hate to bring this up, but I'm going to, that there had been a downturn in television ratings or stagnant nature of television ratings, and also in attendance and ticket sales, a downturn, definitive downturn in ticket sales and television and attendance under Jurgen Klinsmann. So I think this being Bruce Arena's first qualifier back, there was a curiosity factor, there was the factor of hope, there was a liberation factor of the national team being liberated in a way from Jurgen Klinsmann in terms of his reign that just kind of descended into farce at the end. So it stimulated a really good television number and tough circumstance. Now, unfortunately, the Tuesday game, because it was on in English on BN, we're not going to get the same sort of number. Just that's the expectation right off the bat.
Yeah, and maybe, I don't know, a wild guess is probably, I don't know, 300,000, maybe 400,000 for that one, which actually for BN's numbers would be impressive still. But there was confusion about where that game was going to be shown. Which the confusion with that, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I mentioned it in the opening of the show, kind of a comedy of errors. So the comedy of errors on Fox, we've already talked about in terms of the daylight savings time. From US Soccer, the US Soccer website on Tuesday morning, on the main page, on the home page of the website, the main headline said, basically USA, or Panama USA to be televised on FS1, Telemundo, and, Universo. Which is a huge mistake because it was not on FS1, it was on BN Sports. So even US Soccer on their home page, on the website, was putting out, I mean, they made a mistake, but still kind of, I'm sure BN Sports is probably pissed off in terms of that. I mean, just adding more confusion to already confused marketplace in terms of where to watch the US games.
Now I should point out, to folks that this game was on NBC Universo also in addition to Telemundo. So I think most people may not know their not necessarily what channels they get when they get into the deep numbers on their cable system or satellite system, but chances are you got the game, whether it was on Telemundo, Universo, or BN.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what those final numbers are across all three networks. So we've talked about the USA, Honduras, TV numbers. So collectively, so the English language side and the Spanish language side, we're talking about 2.2 million approximately there. The Mexico-Costa Rica game on FS2, we already mentioned that they had 70,000 for that, which is really disappointing. But on the Univision network, so in Spanish language, was 3.1 million. So collectively, so it's about 3.1 million for the Mexico-Costa Rica and then 2.1 for USA against Honduras. Which goes to show, Kartik, in terms of just the popularity of the U.S. national team versus the Mexican national team in the U.S., that looking at this, I mean, the games didn't kick off at the same time, but this is kind of a good sample. Of course, Univision benefits from being over the air, but approximately a million extra viewers for the Mexican game.
Yeah, that's about right, I think. And I think that that's where, if you're talking about hardcore audiences that are going to tune in for games that are qualifiers that may creep up when there are other sporting events going on. That is a good one.
Yeah, plus I think it's the mainstream too. So you look at the mainstream audience, and when the World Cup comes around, they're in. I mean, they're watching those games, they're interested. And then when it's World Cup qualifiers, maybe that they're looking at the headlines on, I don't know, some ESPN.com or whatever it is, but they're not plugged in watching those games. Now, the hardcore audience, I mean, the passionate, I mean, dyed-in-the-wool audience is going to be watching, I mean, the Mexican games, every single game, I mean, cheering them through all the way. And the U.S. fans, more casual for the most part, will dive in into the World Cup. Now, the second game, Panama against USA, I caught the first half of this match. I actually missed the second half of the match. But from what I could see, again, it was a pretty decent performance. I was impressed by Nagby in terms of not just his attacking exploits, but also running back, making some key tackles. As Pulisic, too, of course, coming back, just really fighting for the ball. And I guess at the end of the day, I didn't see the second half, but at the end of the day, I think a 1-1 draw away against Panama is a decent result, and I'm sure US fans would love to have had the win, but in the scheme of things, is that kind of a fair result?
Yeah, I thought it was a very poorly officiated game. Both teams had a hard time with the officials, so I guess that evens out. If there are enough bad calls to go against both sides, then it evens out is the how we look at it. Yeah, I thought it was a pretty fair result. Pulisic was brilliant. His ball control, his ability to pick out a pass, his willingness to make I think, very incisive and dangerous runs are all standing out in CONCACAF because he is playing at an incredibly high level at Dortmund. And for all those U.S. fans that say, oh, well, it really doesn't make a difference. Our guys need to get games. They need to get games in Major League Soccer. So we'd rather have guys like Michael Bradley get games in Toronto than and I know I'm going back 3 years with this argument, but still, because I think it applies, because Michael Bradley was particularly bad in this game. We'd rather him get games in Toronto than sit the bench at Roma. But there is a value if Michael Bradley is at AS Roma and he is training with Daniel De Rossi and Francesco Totti every single day and learning their game and understanding their game and having to play at that level. Something I noticed in this match is that Michael Bradley cannot play at the same speed, both in terms of pace and in terms of thought and quickness of decision making that Christian Pulisic can. And that's a problem for the U.S. going forward. And perhaps that means that Michael Bradley needs to be dropped, or you need to find out some other solution to work around that, because this to me was a very clear example. Pulisic is 18. He's at Borussia Dortmund. He's playing regularly, largely due to injuries to Mario Götze's mysterious illness, which is very unfortunate and hopefully will get solved. And Marco Reus has another injury. So he's playing an awful lot. He had worked his way into getting playing time anyway, even with those guys fit, but now he's starting matches playing 90 minutes instead of the 25, 30 minutes he was before. That is one of the top 10 clubs in Europe right now, and it shows when he comes up against CONCACAF defenses with guys who are playing in Major League Soccer and the Panamanian League, which is where the Panama's defense plays. Same thing with Honduras. They're playing in the Honduran League or in Major League Soccer. And it's become... And most of those guys aren't even playing in the Mexican League, in Liga MX, which is a better league than MLS. And it shows. So that's my take on it. And I know we're going back 3 years, but the Michael Bradley decline in even his thought process and decision-making, speed of decision-making, began when he left Roma and came to MLS. I don't think it can even be questioned at this point that that was a bad move for him. Now, for some other players, it's worked out because they've gotten playing time. They've regained their confidence. It's worked out for Jozy Altidore. I don't think it's worked out for Michael Bradley.
Yeah, I mean, many of his passes, even in that first half, were just very telegraphed. I mean, it was easy to kind of for the defenders to kind of spot that.
Because
you've got
guys like now. There's always been a problem. You and I have discussed this. Well, I guess it wasn't on. Maybe it was on this show. You wouldn't be on it, but it would be with Napoon and Lawrence and Chris Hennage and whoever else. But talked repeatedly on previous incarnations of World Soccer Talk podcast about Michael Bradley not being able to read Clint Dempsey's movement and how Bradley just doesn't play well with Dempsey because Dempsey is a more dynamic player,
right,
and not a static player. Now you add Pulisic to that mix, and Pulisic and Dempsey are 100% on the same page, as we've seen these two matches. I mean, it's a magical combination right now, and Jozy Altidore is doing his part as a foil because his move to Major League Soccer hasn't gone as badly from an international standpoint as Bradley's has. It's becoming very obvious. Bradley telegraphs passes, gives the ball away, is trying to pass to a static position or to a place where he anticipates the player will be, but the player is making a different movement. So I think it's speed of decision making, and Bradley is the problem, in my opinion.
The challenge for the U.S. is who to replace Bradley with in the future. I mean, in the past we had Claudio Reyna. I mean, we've had some really sort of decent creative midfielders, and that's always a tough position, especially on this side of the Atlantic, somebody with that skill set.
I keep hearing from people who follow the Scottish League that Perry Kitchen is the best player, best central midfielder right now in the SPFL or whatever its acronym is now. But look, I'm talking about Major League Soccer being a step down. The Scottish League right now is a step below Major League Soccer in many ways.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm not sure that Perry Kitchen's the answer, but that is an option. He's playing regularly at Hearts, and he's apparently, and again, I don't watch Scottish games, so, but I talked to several people who watch Celtic fans and Rangers fans, and they tell me Kitchen is really, really good in that league, but again, it's that league.
Yeah, so while Pulisic had another great game, I mean, what a bright star this is. Another person that had a man-of-the-match performance, I thought, Kartik, in this one, and I think you missed it because you watched the Telemundo coverage of the game, but was Jay Demerit, who is a surprise co-commentator for this match. teamed up with Phil Shane, and he did an extraordinarily great job. I mean, he really fit in, seemed like a natural, and was good. I mean, he provided the analysis. It was some expert opinions in terms of talking about kind of defensively some of the things he was noticing, talking about midfield in terms of kind of the shape of the team and just how he was worried that they were kind of too far apart. Some really good analysis, and it seems like a natural. I think Jay, if he keeps this up, he could go a long way to being one of the top co-commentators in this country.
Yeah, I he's done a game or two before. Maybe it was for VN and I really liked his or maybe he was in the studio. Was that what it was? But I thought he did a very, very good job. And if you could pair a guy like that with Delacamera regularly, people like Delacamera, people like John Strawn, that brings the best out of these co-commentators, these former players. And I think it also gives them a comfort level. You hit it on the head with Landon Donald. And sparing with JP Delacamera during the Copa America, how well that went to develop Landon as a co-commentator. And I think it's the same thing with guys like Jay Demerick, who don't have that much experience in the booth.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get to watch a lot of the pregame on this one on beIN Sports. My daughter was having a practice session for soccer, so I didn't get home till late. But what I did see was impressive. I thought it was a solid job from the team that they had. And it was a whole cast of new faces that we're not used to seeing on beIN Sports, but we are used to seeing on other networks. So Kevin Egan, hosting, who I thought did a great job. He's works hard at that position and does extremely well. And on the set then, in terms of the analysts that they had Leslie Osborne, Jovan Karoski, and, Carlos Bocanegra. And out of those three analysts that are on the set, I thought Bocanegra did a great job, especially at halftime, looking at kind of Tim Ream's mistakes from that throw-in and just looking at the defense and kind of pointing out some of the things that they should have been doing. So all in all, it was a decent showing, I think, from beIN Sports. And I think in terms of professional level, I think that they're up there and improving, game in, game out. What about Telemundo, Kartik? How was the coverage there?
Oh, it was very good, which is a good sign because, of course, they have the World Cup this time. It's not on Univision as far as Spanish language. They did quite well. I thought the commentators were solid. Andres Cotter popped into the studio, which was nice. They were very, had a difficult time with the flow of the game. The Telemundo announcers, because the flow was killed by a referee that either didn't make calls or had a quick whistle. I mean, there was no, and didn't pull out any cards. There wasn't a single, I don't know. Was there a single booking in this game? I don't think there was.
I didn't see one in the first half, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there was one in the second half either. So, basically, it was a very good broadcast, though, a crisp broadcast. Telemundo had the Mexico Trinidad and Tobago game on before, which was very controversial. TNT was robbed of a point. Jovan Jones had a great goal, a golazo, that was ruled offside, even though there were two Mexican players behind him. So that was unfortunate, but they did a very good job. And this is a lesson for Fox, maybe for the future. They did a very good job of transitioning from that game in their pregame show, bringing Cantor on the set, talking about the United States, talking about Panama, giving a little bit of a background on where the U.S. was going under Bruce Arena, what was going on with the Panamanian national team, who's had a lot of players in the last year or two go back to the Panamanian League, particularly from Major League Soccer, when they were in the Gold Cup final in 2015, or should have been the final, right? They got robbed in that game against Mexico, that infamous game in Atlanta. The core of their team was playing in Major League Soccer. Now they still have a few guys there, but several guys have come back to Panama, which puts them in a position where I think this is their window shutting. They've had a really good run, the best generation of football in Panamanian history, but we all remember how they missed the World Cup last time, how close they were, and then, of course, that Gold Cup, which they were robbed in, and chances are they would have beaten Jamaica in the final. So this is it for them, and there was a lot of discussion of that. And They got a point in this game. So I thought Telemundo's coverage was very good. I'm sure BN, which I didn't really watch, was pretty good as well. I mean, I think here is the problem, Chris, I think with a lot of fans of the sport, core fans of the sport, any broadcast looks good in their mind when compared with Fox. Now, I don't know if that's fair, but people have their reasons for feeling that way. And they're going to give, particularly coming off the heels of Fox and what we talk about on Friday night being a clown show in their studio, coming off that, off the back end of that, I think both Telemundo and BN would have passed a very basic test for most fans watching because it wasn't Fox.
Yeah, it's different styles, really. I mean, each network has their own style, and I think tries hard to have their own style. And Fox, again, love them or hate them, they have their own style. Telemundo and Universo, two definitely contact that we're going to be keeping a close eye on, especially with Confederations Cup this summer too. I mean, you've got they'll be broadcasting the games as well as Fox, as well as the World Cup, and actually Kartik, I think we've been invited down to the Telemundo Universo studios in the next couple of months to kind of meet with them and kind of check out the studio setup and learn more about what they'll be doing. So that'll be interesting, and I'm sure we'll share that with the listeners in terms of that.
That's exciting. I look forward to that.
So what about ESPN FC, Kartik? I know I always want to watch the show, but just never find the time to watch it. How did they do in terms of coverage of these World Cup qualifiers and the USA games?
Yeah, it's kind of different for me. I mean, they, for whatever reason, I turned this on before I turned games on, it seems like these days. Hercules Gomez contributed a lot in the studio this week, with Dan Thomas hosting, but it is just exclusively on segments related to the U.S. men's national team. He's very good, very polished. And that again comes from his Gold Cup experience, Copa America experience with Fox this previous summer. I guess he's not comfortable enough with European football or South American football that when they talk UEFA or CONMEBOL, he's off the set. But he was pretty good. Craig Burley absolutely ripped the ease of CONCACAF qualifying because he feels like the hex it, half the teams get in and then you've got a fourth team that's in a playoff and naturally you have two weak teams, so basically everybody makes it, is his philosophy. Now, Alejandro Moreno and Hercules Gomez pushed back on that saying, hey, there's a qualifying process to get to that hex. But he said, look, in Europe, you have one team that makes it out. Yes, in South America, half the teams make it, but they're all good. Now, this time around, they're all good other than Venezuela. Venezuela really struggling. But 9 of the 10 teams are good. So there are four teams that would probably, let's be honest, probably would qualify in CONCACAF that don't qualify from CONMEBOL. So Burley made the suggestion, well, maybe they need to merge into CONMEBOL. My feeling has always been, it's easier to have two final qualifying groups. The reason that doesn't happen, and you separate the U.S. and Mexico, the reason that doesn't happen is the television phenomena of U.S. versus Mexico and how big a game it's been. And if you could have two competitive matches, but the U.S. and Mexico playing enough friendlies against each other, but two competitive U.S.-Mexico games that are qualifiers, it's a cash cow for CONCACAF, it's a cash cow for whoever's marketing Game Soccer United marketing, etc., and they're never going to give that up. So that's the reason that happens. In fairness, you could say, well, that's CONCACAF's corruption. In fairness, part of the reason why there are balance groups in UEFA, Chris, and you know this as well as anyone, is because they separate five or six of the countries for TV purposes. So England, France, Italy, Spain, the Netherlands, and who would be this? Germany. Those six countries that have the largest television audiences, largest television contracts with UEFA, cannot be in the same group with one exception. So two of them can be paired together, but then the other four will have to be separated, is how it works. So this time, Italy and Spain have been paired together. Wait a second, Netherlands and France together. Maybe it's not Netherlands. Maybe it's someone else. Or maybe it's just those five. That's right, because the Netherlands are a smaller country. But Germany, Italy, Spain, England, France, with one exception, are always separated for television purposes. Now, that's a new phenomena because UEFA just consolidated the television contracts in the last go-round of negotiations. But that is something that UEFA is doing. So they were pretty good on that. And then I want to jump ahead and mention that they had a really interesting television rating, great show on on Sunday night, which allowed you to see all the highlights of UEFA and CONMEBOL qualifiers that you might have missed, which I had missed from Thursday in CONMEBOL and Friday, Saturday, Sunday in UEFA. And that show actually had a really surprisingly high rating of almost, 80,000 viewers, live, which was a stunner because ESPN FC never gets that kind of number.
Yeah, that's interesting because I didn't even hear anything about that in terms of any publicity to let people know that that was even out there, which it's a great idea.
I don't think that there was any publicity about it. I think it just sort of happened and maybe people realized because it's not like, club football where, if you're a Premier League fan, you get to see everything because you have NBC, or you're a La Liga fan, you get to see just about everything on BN, and BN, of course, doesn't share their highlights with the ESPN FC program, so you're not going to see La Liga highlights on the Sunday night wrap-up ESPN FC show. They had their Sunday night wrap-up show. Now, granted, it was a half an hour earlier than usual. It's usually at midnight. It was at 11:30, but for some reason, there was this natural move of people watching it.
Yeah, so speaking of UEFA, so I watched the England-Lithuania game, and it was a really kind of slow boil, really. It was just kind of really a slow and cumbersome performance. But it was great to see Jermaine Defoe back in action and seeing him scoring. He definitely adds a whole new level to England's attack. I also watched the Wales against Ireland game, I think from Thursday or Friday, and this one I watched on ESPN3, and disappointing performance aside for Wales. I mean, this game, unfortunately, was summed up by just one horrific tackle. Neil Taylor on Seamus Coleman. And I think Seamus had a triple leg break in that one from this horrendous tackle. And when it happened, actually, watching it real time, when it happened, yes, it looked like a bad tackle, but I was waiting for the replay. I was like, okay, well, let me see. Because he got a red card just within a minute or two and walked off the pitch. And I was like, okay, let me see the replay. They never showed the replay on this one. In hindsight, for good reason, because it must have been pretty horrific in terms of seeing the leg break. But I just thought that was interesting that they didn't show that. But it was a rough and dirty game, even from the first half to Ireland was putting in elbows and forearms. And it's a bad result for Wales and it definitely hurts their chances of qualifying for the World Cup. Now, CONMEBOL, Kartik, I watched a bunch of these games. But the challenge with CONMEBOL, though, too, is that almost whenever there's a game on, it's always overlapping with another game from CONMEBOL. One game starts at 4, the next one starts at it starts every hour. So 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, it goes all the way through. There's so many games, and it's just a challenge, not just for the TV viewer, but also for being in sports as far as figuring out, okay, which game, because you have back-to-back-to-back games. So you're going to have one channel on the English one on the Spanish, and there's always people that are not happy because maybe they don't have access to the Spanish beIN Sports in Espanol. It's a mess. But in terms of the games, I watched the Brazil against Uruguay game from last week. It was interesting in this one in terms of Carlos Ruiz was the co-commentator. So beIN Sports is, I guess experimenting a lot. Ruiz during the game was pretty decent, but he's definitely rough around the edges. Doesn't look like he's had a lot of training in terms of doing co-commentary, at least in English. And at halftime, they were doing the halftime highlights, and he was all over the place. He didn't know what to say. It was just a mess. But Phil Shane tried to help him as much as possible. But possibly he could do well in the future. I think he needs a lot of work before he gets to be kind of a better product or a better listen on the commentaries. And then let me see if there's any other games that pop out in terms of ones I watched that had anything interesting from CONMEBOL. Nope, that's about it. And then last but not least, Kartik. Actually, two games last but not least. One is I watched Iran against China on ESPN3. And I watched this one because it was a big game for both countries. China eventually lost this game 1-0, and that could have a big blow on their chances of qualifying for the next World Cup, which would be huge. But also, you had Marcello Lippi as the China coach and Carlos Queiroz for Iran. So you had kind of two masterminds in coaching coming up against each other. Officially, the game had 80,000 in attendance. Unofficially, it was about 100,000. Because on top of the stadium, they had a wall that went around the entire stadium. They had thousands and thousands of fans that probably got in for nothing and just sat on the wall, like, you mean, I don't know, like 10 stories up, looking down at this game. So from the TV viewer perspective, it was a great game to watch. The game itself wasn't that good, but Iran got a huge 3 points in this one.
Yeah, Carlos Kiroš, one of four former MetroStars managers, along with Bruce Arena, Juan Carlos Osorio, and Octavio Zambrano, now the new head coach of Canada, managing in international football now, and all three North American nations, Canada, the U.S., and Mexico, have former MetroStars coaches. So that's interesting. Oh, I guess. They were already Red Bull by the time Juan Carlos Osorio managed them. So Red Bull slash MetroStars.
And then lastly, I watched Fortuna Horing against Manchester City, the women's team, on MyCujo.tv. And we talked about this last week. It was great to see Carly Lloyd getting the winner in this game. So so that was something different. But all in all, it was a crazy... Actually, usually international breaks are boring as hell, but this one to me was actually really exciting because there were a lot of meaningful games, a lot of games where we're getting down to kind of, you know, towards the end or three quarters of the way through the qualifying process, and things are starting to get hot and heavy out there.
Yeah, certainly, and a great goal for Carly Lloyd in that. I couldn't remember if we discussed that last week on the show or not, but I watched it. I believe I watched it last Wednesday. I can't remember.
Yeah,
it was maybe it was after we did the show.
It was after we did the show. Yeah, I think it was on the Thursday. I think, but
yeah, maybe it was Thursday.
It's like a whirlwind of a week. So speaking of whirlwinds, International Champions Cup is coming to the U.S. this summer. We already know that for El Clasico Miami, there's over 46,000 tickets that went on sale, that have been sold. And in addition to that, a lot of the pre-sales have started this week. So we've got a ton of information about the pre-sale codes on worldsoccertalk.com and a whole bunch of other information about how to get tickets to International Champions Cup. It's a hot ticket, definitely, with all these major teams coming. So buying tickets to sports can be very complicated at times, but there is a simpler, better way to buy, and that's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. They help you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. And it's nothing like seeing your favorite football club in person. And SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. So I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets, especially for International Champions Cup, for ICCC. So I can be anywhere, and just with a few taps, I can instantly find seats. So it's designed to save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed. So, to World Soccer Talk listeners, you get $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. To get your rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app on iPhone or Android. Go to the Settings tab and click Add a Promo Code, and then enter promo code WSTPOD. That's WSTPOD, and then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Now, Kartik, let's move on to the next segment, which is talking about TV streaming news. And the first one is some big news out of the southeastern United States.
Yeah, so Fox Sports South has announced their inaugural, or Atlanta United has announced their inaugural local broadcast team for coverage on Fox Sports South, and it's a star-studded team. So you've got... Alan Green coming over from the BBC, BBC Radio. Those of you who've listened to Five Live for years know who he is, probably revere the guy. He's going to be the lead play-by-play announcer for Atlanta United, or commentator, as they call it, as the British call it, after the Champions League final in Cardiff. He won't be coming over till then. Until then, Kevin Egan, who we've just talked about, would be in sports, the excellent Kevin Egan, who has a lot of experience in Major League Soccer from his time with the Chicago Fire, will be calling the games on Fox Sports South. Brittany Arnold will be joining him. She's also from BN. And Dan Gargan, will be the co-commentator, former MLS player, former player in USL as well. A very, very good up-and-coming color analyst, has worked in studios before. And I think it's very, very interesting that Atlanta continues to make these hirings, now even on the broadcast side, that make you say, wow, we didn't know an MLS team was capable of this. And certainly bringing over Alan Green is not something that most MLS teams would be capable of. So that's a huge hiring, and it should be very good. Seeing Alan Green on television will be interesting as well. Again, that's Fox Sports South. The reason why they didn't announce it until now is because Atlanta United has had all of its games on national television to this point.
Yeah, and Brittany Arnold is going to be also kind of the YouTube or the TV channel for Atlanta United.
Right.
A lot of in-house video doing that too, as well as being the sideline reporter. Alan Green, it's a great hire, Kartik, and it's a smart move by Atlanta United, taking advantage of actually Alan Green, because he has family in the U.S., so he's here every summer anyway. And they probably thought, okay, let's at least approach him, see if he might be interested in taking on kind of doing some commentating of games after the Champions League. And I mean, it's a relatively easy job in terms of kind of stepping into those shoes. So that's the reason why I think in many ways they went for him.
And I guess as I recall the release, I don't have it in front of me, I believe Brittany Arnold is actually leaving BN and now working full time for Atlanta United, which is great. So you have an experienced seasoned person as your in-house host for Atlanta United TV. So many, and I know this, and I've been guilty of this because I've worked in communications in the sport in the United States. So often you just hire someone in-house who doesn't have the television background or just wants to be on camera to do that job. And Atlanta United's gone out and hired someone with a great deal of on-camera experience and experience in the sport to do it. So more big moves from Atlanta United, a club that managed by Tata Martino has gotten off to a pretty good start and wants to be, I think, MLS's first iconic global brand. And these moves help make that happen.
Yeah, definitely smart moves on and off the pitch from Atlanta United. Speaking of smart moves on and off the pitch, a piece of news is that a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned Sportel, the convention in Miami for TV buyers and sellers of rights. I had a chance to interview the Bayern Munich Americas president, and the interview and actually the article is on the website on worldsoccertalk.com. But a couple of the key points that came out of this was that I asked him, I said, okay, would the Bundesliga be open to shifting some time slots in the future in terms of making some games more attractive to viewers in Asia or North America or around the world? And he didn't rule it out. He didn't say yes. He didn't say no. But it basically depends on the markets, and that's something they would have to take a look at. So reading into that, it could be that he didn't want to come out and say, okay, absolutely not. We would never change that. And vice versa, he didn't come out and say yes. We're going to do that. So it's a possibility. But I didn't get much. I wasn't really convinced by that in terms of positivity, like thinking that they're going to change things up. But at least they're considering it or looking at it. The other piece of news too is that he just mentioned in terms of the amount of work that Bayern Munich does, not just to promote the club throughout the Americas, North America and South America, working with the fan clubs and having representatives from the club tour United States for different fan events, etc. But he also talked about just video, and he said that on a daily basis, Bayern Munich, the club, is sending exclusive videos to Fox Sports on a daily basis, giving them as much content as they can possibly want. We don't see a lot of that, but at least there's that kind of they're trying to help in terms of giving Fox access to a lot of video, some of it exclusive, some of it not, but ways to promote Bayern Munich as well as other clubs. I'm sure they get video from other clubs in the United States. Now, Kartik, speaking of the Bundesliga, they had an announcement this week about a new campaign.
Yeah, I got this email in my inbox this morning from the Bundesliga, which I'm sure you got as well, discussing the Goal Mania campaign. And basically what this is going to be is between the next three match days, they're going to advertise 10 days, 27 matches between March 31st and April 9th. They have a midweek match day coming up this week, which is something that's happening in a lot of European leagues coming off the international break. So you're going to have games including Munich and Borussia Dortmund, which is the biggest match from a table standpoint in German football over the course of the last six or seven seasons. And that's a highlight of it, as well as the River Derby between Schalke and Borussia Dortmund. The press release I got from the Bundesliga, I don't know if it was geared towards the American audience, because it highlighted Christian Pulisic on here. Now, of course, it has Aubameyang at the top in talking about the derby with Schalke, but at the bottom in the infograph, the key quartet, it has Aubameyang as one of the two Borussia Dortmund players, along with Christian Pulisic. So I don't know if it's geared specifically to the American audience, or they're genuinely putting him in there, because as I mentioned earlier, Götze and Royce are both out currently. So that's the way they're promoting it. And I think maybe they realize in the American market the Pulisic thing is their opportunity to break through, because he is in their league and they're going to ride it as long as they have him.
Yeah, it's a hook. It's a big hook to try to attract viewers. Christian Seifert, who's the CEO of the Bundesliga, was in New York, I think last week, and was interviewed by Grant Wall. And in Sports Illustrated, Seifert talked about the Bundesliga wanting to sign more young American stars. So it's definitely a place that the Bundesliga is going to be welcoming any U.S. stars.
Well, there are three guys right now that have been signed, as I mentioned that I haven't mentioned, but I'm mentioning now, that have been signed to Schalke, who are now beginning to get action with their reserve team and even looks with the first team in friendlies. In addition to that, you remember when we were in Germany, the Leverkusen CEO asked us for who the best young American player for them to sign would be. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yep.
That was that was something he asked us directly. Hey, if you have someone, send them our way. So that, I think that's a point of emphasis in Germany right now.
Yeah. And I think it goes beyond marketing though, too. I mean, I think Pulisic is a good example of seeing somebody who is a star talent. I mean, so it's not just about getting people that are going to bring in TV viewers, but it's young, fresh talent. And hopefully, you know, with some good coaching, good training, that they can move up to the highest level. So it's interesting we'll be getting into the Bundesliga in a little bit in more detail. And last but not least, Kartik, in terms of another interview I did this past week, this is with the CEO of MyCujo, which is the streaming site we mentioned that did the Man City game, the women's game. And I'm going to be publishing the article in the next week, but essentially their take is that what they're positioning themselves as is, they said that there's tons of soccer coverage, whether it's the Premier League, Bundesliga, MLS, you go down the list. But there's so many games that only represents about 5% of the games played. There's another 95% of games that are played around the world that are never shown, it's not easy to find coverage of those games. So what they're focused on is trying to give soccer fans the ability to go to visit their website for free, there's no charge, and watch games from around the world. And then on the back end, then they're working with the clubs in terms of the clubs pay Cujo to basically stream the games and provide awareness around the world of those clubs' games to an audience. So it's a different take, and it's an interesting take. What he did say, he didn't mention names, but he did say that he's in talks with some clubs from North America, and in the near future, he's hoping to do some deals with some clubs. So is that USL? Is that... is that the lower leagues than that, or is it? There's some opportunities there, Kartik, for games that maybe aren't televised that could find some airtime. What are your thoughts on that in terms of whether it's lower league U.S. soccer? Is there an opportunity there, and would there be enough viewers to make it worthwhile?
There's content, but I think what we're finding with the lower leagues of American soccer is the only people who watch the games are fans of those specific teams. So there isn't really a national following for either USL or NASL. I think both leagues like to think they have a national following, but it's very, very niche. But if you're looking to fill content and get some viewers, based on local viewers in out of who are away, yes, I think it is a good content filler.
Yeah, and they're not focused on like big numbers. They're focused on kind of the long tail. So just providing access. So somebody could watch whether it's women's soccer or a lot of it is lower division soccer. I mean, you look at England as one example. League One and League Two games are not televised in the US. So those leagues and those clubs are missing out on a worldwide potential of a lot of viewers. Now, that might be too big for Cujo. Maybe Cujo is looking at some lower divisions of, I don't know, French leagues, Swiss leagues, US leagues. But it's just an opportunity for soccer fans to be able to actually watch these games. The example he gave was Boavista from Portugal, which was his club, one of the top four clubs in Portugal. And they got relegated to the third tier. And he wasn't able to watch any of the games on television. So that was kind of his inspiration to kind of think of, like, well, how is that possible? You mean, it's not fair that, you mean, this is a big club. They've been relegated, but he can't actually watch games on television or online. So that was one of his inspirations for starting up this model to provide coverage. You mean, no matter where that team is, up or down the league, for access. But it's an interesting take. And again, we'll have more information in the next week on worldsoccertalk.com. Now, Kartik, moving on to the next segment, TV ratings. We talked about this last week, but we didn't have the number. And we said Manchester City against Liverpool, NBC on a Sunday, taking advantage of the daylight saving time that the UK hadn't started up on it. So for us, it was 12:30 Eastern time to 2:30 Eastern time. Very little competition, and I think we predicted, I think, a million plus. And we said, okay, we'll have to wait and see what that number is. It should be a big one. What was that number, Kartik?
It was just over a million. It was, I think it was pretty disappointing. 1.022 million was that final number, but I guess it cleared the million threshold. We talked about Premier League ratings being stagnant. Here's another example.
Yeah. It was pretty decent. I mean, the game itself, I don't know. If it was kind of, I don't know, if it was a race for first, I mean, Chelsea's so far ahead. I mean, we talked about this probably about 2 months ago. We said, okay, the title race is over. That's it. Chelsea's got it. So if the match was more meaningful in terms of at least kind of fighting for first place, I think that would have gotten a bump. But, so I wasn't disappointed, but I was glad it was over a million. But yeah, it could have been higher, definitely. And then other TV ratings for this past week, just a couple to pull out here too. England against Lithuania, I mentioned I watched that game. It was on FS2 on that Sunday, last Sunday, and that had 146,000 viewers, which kind of goes to show two things. I think FS2, you mean, how few people watch that network, but also England, how little interest there is really in the national team. And then the second thing is that it was the same number, the viewing audience, 146,000 for the New York Red Bulls against Real Salt Lake game, which was on UNAMAS on Saturday afternoon. I think it was at 4 Eastern, I think it was. And then Kartik, what about Germany, Azerbaijan?
Yeah, that got a pretty decent number of 194,000 on ESPN2. It was on at the same time as England-Lithuania. And as I mentioned earlier, ESPN FC that night had 79,000 viewers, which is much higher than usual.
Okay, so moving on to the next segment, which is listener mailbags. So we got a couple of emails from listeners. The first is from Scott from McAllen, Texas. And he writes, I had the Mexico against Costa Rica game in English on my phone on Fox Sports Go, and I heard a familiar wail coming from my phone when a close call would happen in the match. Did Fox bring in a Univision commentator for that game alongside Kobe Jones? It was odd to hear when you're used to hearing him in Spanish. So the answer to that question is the commentator was Jorge Perez Navarro. And I only watched maybe 5 minutes of this game, but I was completely sucked into the commentator too. I thought he did a great job. A very passionate commentator, just pure Eltree style, you mean, just really, really passionate in a high-pitched game, a fever-pitched game. And Perez Navarro has also worked at ESPN Deportes, so definitely has a lot of experience. But that's the answer, Scott, to that question. Now, Kartik, this next question is for you. This is from Anthony Bello, one of our listeners, and he says, any idea why Orlando City stopped syndicating its matches to other Florida markets?
I don't know why. I haven't gotten an answer from the club. yet. I've actually inquired about this, but they have stopped. That's definitive. I'm not quite sure the reason, and Anthony, I'm happy to share it with you and everybody else once I get an answer from the organization.
And the next question from him is something that we will answer at the end of this show. But he says, do you think that La Liga not playing all of the games at the same time, like the Premier League, would give them an advantage over other leagues? And we'll dive into that in our feature topic of the week. But his last question, or comment, Kartik, from Anthony, he says, every time I do a Premier League predictor, I get a surprising outcome. Watford either gets relegated or finishes 17th. I know you guys are talking about Bournemouth not being out of the woods yet, but Watford has two fewer points than the Cherries, and everybody thinks Watford is safe. And if we are talking about the Premier League relegation, I think the safe number is going to be 34 points. Do you think that's going to be the number, Kartik?
Yeah, I think it'll be 34 or 35, and I agree with Anthony. Watford is not out of the woods. I think they probably stay up, but they have gone through a couple of extended periods in this season where they've been downright terrible. And keep in mind, Kiki Sanchez Flores got sacked after last season when they went through a funk late in the season. They were safe. He had gotten them safe maybe even by Christmas. I mean, they were in the top half for much of the season, and he got sacked after they had fallen off in the second half of the season and finished 15th or 16th or something like that. I will also point out, though, that Watford made a big run in the FA Cup last season, mm-hmm. which they have not made this season. So there is a possibility. I think that that's a good observation.
Yeah, and I'm still worried about Swansea. They're playing Middlesbrough this weekend, not last weekend, as I mentioned in the last podcast, but this weekend they're playing Borough. If they can beat Borough, I think they're okay. I think they should be okay. But if they lose that one, then it could easily be Swansea. It's pulled into the kind of that third team that's relegated.
One quick note on this. I know it seems like Sunderland will eventually and inevitably go down, but until they do, we have a history of four successive great escapes by them, particularly the one in 2014, which is really a great escape. Until Sunderland is dead and buried, I think the other teams like Swansea in particular are going to be looking over their shoulder because there's just that history.
Exactly. So if you do have any questions, feedback or comments about the show or about anything related to soccer coverage on TV, online or apps, send us an email and we'll read it out on air. It's the email address is web@worldsoccertalk.com. Twitter is WSoccerTalk, and then Facebook is facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. So Kartik, our final segment of the show, it's our featured topic of the week. It's talking about Bundesliga's global growth strategy. So I mentioned a couple of segments ago that Christian Seifert, who's the CEO of the Bundesliga, was in New York City last week to make a presentation at a conference. And here, or there, he went ahead and launched his strategy. So the strategy is that they're launching an innovation and growth strategy. And the main focus is on improving technology and media. So here's what they're going to do. Starting next season, the Bundesliga will have a video assistant referee for all games. The Bundesliga is also testing UHD HDR technology, which is better than 4K. It's different than the HDR that, on our phones. It's supposed to be, the picture quality is much better. The whites are whiter. The dark colors are darker. So visually, much better view of a game in terms of more high res, really. And then they're also testing robotic cameras. So you're thinking, well, I'm thinking that that's probably going to help out in terms of maybe replays or maybe to benefit some of the referees with the video assistant referees, perhaps. They didn't go into a lot of detail about that. And they're also launching a brand ambassadors program soon, which will feature Lothar Matthäus, Jens Lehmann, and others that will be focusing on the slogan, football as it's meant to be. So now the Bundesliga's plan is all well and good, but it avoids the elephant in the room. And that's the reason I think that the league is suffering in the US and only has 74,000 average viewing audience per game. And that is that almost all of the games are at the same time and they clash with the games from the Premier League. So if you look at La Liga as an example, and this goes back to one of the questions from the listener mailbag, but the Spanish top flight has made a conscious effort to change the league to make it more of a TV product. So we talked about this last week too. Production has improved. Cameras, number of cameras, camera angles. The La Liga as a TV product is much, much better than it was just even a year or two ago. But what La Liga has done is that they made sure that every single week there's not one La Liga game that overlaps with another. So there's one on Friday, there's four every Saturday, four every Sunday, and then one on Monday. And none of them are played at the same time as other Spanish games. So if you really like La Liga, if you wanted to, you could watch these games back to back to back without over the entire weekend being able to see all the teams without having to make a decision on a Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern time or a Saturday morning at 9:30 Eastern time when there's four or five Bundesliga games on and at 10 o'clock when there's like four or five Premier League games on. So it's a smart move by La Liga. So at the same time during a typical soccer weekend, out of those 10 La Liga games, none of them overlap, but five of them do clash with the Premier League. So half of them clash. But in the Bundesliga, 9 out of the 10 games clash with the Premier League. The only one that doesn't really clash is the Friday one. And the Premier League plans on, in the future, adding more Friday fixtures. So there'll be more clashes happening. So, Kartik, I think that the Bundesliga is a wonderful, exciting league to watch. I love it. I enjoy watching it. The atmospheres are wonderful. I mean, the tickets are cheap. The quality of football on display is wonderful. You know, TV production is great. Yes, it's a one-horse race in the league, but look at the other teams in terms of talent. It's a great league to watch. My issue is, and I think this is the reason why the German league is having a really difficult time in the United States in terms of growing that audience, is it just clashes with the Premier League. And no matter how great the technology is that there are CEO mentions about all these new things that are being added and better, whether it's HDR or you name it, it's not going to fix the fundamental issue, which is that most of these games, almost 9 out of 10 of them, clash with the Premier League. And that is the issue that I see that the Bundesliga needs to address. And thus far, they haven't touched it. Kartik, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. We've talked about this ad nauseum on the show, right? That their games, their kickoffs all conflict with the Premier League, and generally the American audience is comfortable with the Premier League. You can argue about the quality of the league and argue about the quality of play. All of that stuff, all those arguments are valid from where I sit. There is definitely some validity to an argument that the Premier League is not the great league that it's made out to be. That having been said, the American audience is comfortable with that league. They prefer NBC to Fox, probably, is part of the consideration. And they're just not aware what channel the Bundesliga games are on, if it's FS1, FS2, what have you, Fox Soccer Plus. And I just think that ship has sailed. It's done. If they stay in those time slots. And I have to say, even if they change the time slots, they're then going to run into conflicts with La Liga, which is probably not going to favor them either.
Yeah, yeah. And I was thinking about that this morning too, Kartik, because I basically kind of positioning an argument, but I wanted to come up with a solution, at least to say, okay, well, here's a couple of ideas of how to fix that. So that is the issue, because if you do have the games kicking off later, like you said, then you're running up against La Liga. So what I looked at in terms of the weekly schedule, I thought, okay, well, Monday games. What if they had a game that kicked off at 8 o'clock German time, so that's 2 o'clock Eastern time, United States. It would start an hour before the Premier League, and we'll give viewers at least an opportunity to watch maybe a Monday game that works out well for the Premier League. I mean, the Premier League now, we've gotten so accustomed to Monday games. At least that there's an advantage there of taking one of the games from the weekend, moving it to a Monday. The second thing is adding a late Sunday game. So if in Germany they had a Sunday night kickoff, 7 o'clock local time there. That would be 1 o'clock Eastern time in the United States. And that would give, you watch the Premier League game from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And then there's a big German game that happens right after that live on Fox, whether it's, FS1, FS2, whatever it may be. But there's another opportunity. So there's an opportunity for a second game that could be moved. And then last but not least, maybe an early Saturday game. I think the US audience, we've seen, I mean, even from the West Coast numbers, that West Coasters and East Coasters are willing to wake up early to watch a game if it's a big game in the Premier League. And it's worked really well. It's added a whole new window, for TV coverage in the US in terms of, you know, big numbers. And if the Bundesliga added an early game, maybe it's a 6:30 kickoff in the morning on a Saturday, which gives them again an hour advantage using the time differences to their advantage, which would be 12:30 Eastern time, 12:30 German time, local time in Germany. But there's three games. So they currently have one game that doesn't clash. I mean, as suggestions, there's three additional games here. So there'll be four games out of the 10 that wouldn't clash, which is, to me at least, much better than just the one game right now that doesn't clash. So Kartik, I agree with you in terms of at least the it's kind of sad in a way, because I do want the German league to thrive. I just think it's facing a really difficult challenger, and it's tough. I mean, they have to change in order to improve their numbers if they want to improve those numbers. If they're happy with gradual growth, a few thousand here, a few thousand there. But for Bayern Munich games, I mean, Bayern Munich games, it's rare, incredibly rare, that they get over 100,000 viewers. And that's Bayern Munich. That's the biggest team in the United States from the German side. So if they can't hit 100,000, what hope is there for the rest of the teams in the league?
Yeah, I think that's the general sense. And part of this also is that we talk about the popularity of the Premier League. There's also kind of an insular nature of the Premier League. A lot of American Premier League fans have adopted the English mentality. They want everything English, right? They want the commentary style to be English. They want the presentation to be English. They want to think like they're English. And they also have adopted that kind of isolationism in terms of watching other football. There's an acknowledgement that Barcelona and Real Madrid are on a pedestal. But like so many in England, they have this very contemptuous view of German football, even kind of condescending view of it, which is not borne out by any sort of reality, considering the Bundesliga has been so much more successful in European competitions lately than the Premier League. But that is part of the obstacle the Premier League is facing here. In some ways, it's like trying to break through in Britain, which is never going to happen.
Right, right. I mean, the Bundesliga does have some advantages. I mean, they have Alan Fontaine, who does the some of the commentary. We got Derek Ray once in a while when they have the
fantastic
BT Sport. Owen Hargreaves. So they have some things going for them. I mean, definitely the cultural language difference is a factor. But I just think at the end of the day, if there's an opportunity to have games kicked off at different times, just a few where they don't overlap with the Premier League, I mean, I would definitely watch more Bundesliga games. I mean, if there was kind of a break of a couple of hours between, or a break of a couple of hours after a Premier League match, where there's really nothing on that in that window, I would watch more Bundesliga. Just for me personally, it's difficult to watch all the leagues because there's so many games, and I have to make decisions, I have to make choices. And if there's a way to make it so that, I mean, the Bundesliga was another choice because there was nothing else going on at that time, I would watch more games.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think they've just been a victim of all of this. And of course, we've talked time and again about them being late to the American market. So I think it is what it is. They can hope for small increases, small boosts in numbers, but they're in general probably beat, as horrible as that sounds. Mm-hmm. They're probably in a position where they're not going to be able to overcome this.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a couple of years from now. I think the rights deal is up for bidding. But it doesn't matter who has it, if it's NBC or, I mean, which they wouldn't take it because of the Premier League, but no matter who has it, they're going to find the same issues. And it's something that a TV network can't solve. It has to be the league and federation themselves. And at the end of the day, you mean, it ends up being that the German public has to probably be the ones to change. And with them having so much control and so much influence, maybe it never changes in terms of the way that things are today.
Let me just register for those of you listening, if you're still listening. I know this has been a long show, but I do really respect the organic fan-driven, supporter-driven nature of German football that prevents these changes from happening. What's happened in England is that the league has become so corporate and so business-oriented and so focused on international markets that they've rolled over fans. They've run over fans, moving games, charging exorbitant ticket prices, really kind of disconnecting local fan support and supporters' bases from their clubs and from their sport. That has not happened in Germany. So I have to say I respect German football for that. It just inhibits what they can do here in the States and in China and in other markets where they might want to break through.
Yeah, one last thing to Kartik too is that this time last year, the Bundesliga had, it was probably about 5 to 8 games that were on over-the-air television, I think from like January or February all the way through till May. So it was like almost every 2 weeks we had a major, well, some of them weren't major, but we had a game, a Bundesliga game that was on Fox over the air. And I just found out this morning that as of right now, the game between Bayern Munich and Dortmund on April 8th, I think it is, or 9th, 12:30 Eastern time is going to be on FS1, which FS1's great, nothing wrong with that, but for whatever reason, I mean, whether it's the Bundesliga or if it's Fox, it's probably Fox, but they're deciding not to put these games on over the air.
And I wish they would just move that game then to FX like they did last season. That's a carrier with more homes than FS1. But exactly. I kind of get it.
Yeah, but it just makes you wonder, okay, are they not giving up, but do they see that as a failure, or did they say, okay, we've tried it, it's just there's not any windows open, or I don't know. It just seems to be, I don't know. I'm kind of confused in terms of that one, whether it's Fox not trying hard enough, or if it's the Bundesliga saying, okay, well, let's just wait until we launch our new global strategy, and then we'll come back hard, I mean, for the beginning of the next season with all this technology advancements. Maybe then that'll be the right time to launch our new campaign. Sometimes it is down to kind of marketing, unfortunately. So, Kartik, where can listeners find you on the internet?
Easiest place is KKFLA737 on Twitter.
All right. So, listeners, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. And if you like the show, go ahead and share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. We'd love for you for that. So, Kartik, over to you, sir.
Enjoy your football.